Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right, we do. Welcome back to another episode of Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans, for the fans. I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and we have a lot of contracts, a lot of news to talk about here. It is, although, you know, we do have fans from all 32 teams, we are fairly heavily weighted in the AFC direction this particular week. But it looks like it's pretty much all AFC news anyway, so who cares? I am joined by three fans here, and we're going to be hearing from a fourth. But first off, let's go back to our Thursday stalwart, Greg, from the Steel City. Well, how's it going, Greg?
Going great. I'm enjoying the weekend. I rocked the dad bod at the pool all day, and now I'm drinking some Seven Kingdoms beer that I found for the Game of Thrones enthusiast.
Nice. If you didn't get my reference, Greg is our Pittsburgh Steelers superfan who is quite confident that he's going to the Super Bowl. Someone who I think is probably as confident or maybe just being belligerent about everyone else not going to the Super Bowl, we have our Patriots superfan, Patrick. How's it going, Patrick?
Great. This is a game of attrition, buddy. Everybody else not making it is how you go.
That actually does make sense. But I'm even more happy to present and welcome our newest superfan. He is our new Baltimore Ravens superfan, Don, calling in here from the Charming City or the City of Charm?
Charm City. Yeah, Charm City. I'm about 45 minutes southeast from there. But yeah, they call it Charm City, which if you've ever been there before, it's not quite the most charming city in some areas, but not a bad place to be.
It's not probably quite as big of a lie as the City of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia, but yeah. Either way, so Don, tell us a little about yourself. Give us your street cred of being a Baltimore superfan. Explain to us why you were so insane about this team.
Oh, absolutely. I'm lucky enough to be a Ravens season ticket holder since 2008. Last year, unfortunately, was the first year that I missed a couple games. I've been to three away games for us. We've lost every single one, so I might not be going to any more away games in my lifetime. But, you know, room's decked out with it. I check stats, check information, you know, watch every single game. Like I said, you know, been going to all the games for 8 years now. Looking forward to a rebound season, because I think we'll be a lot better than we, you know, 5-11 like we were last year.
Good stuff. Well, you know, it's really not a big deal that you missed a couple of games last year, because the Baltimore Ravens missed a few games as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I missed the Steelers game, which is the only game that I missed that I wish I had went to, but in retrospect. But I think they'll be showing up a little bit more this year.
I think so as well. Looks like you guys will be coming back healthy, and it's going to be a really interesting division, you know, and a big fight between you and Greg. Looking forward to hearing more of that. But without further ado, we're going to be getting into talking about all of the players that got long-term deals at the franchise tag deadline, and those who are going to be playing out the season on the tag, and a few other news items from around the league. And the first one I wanted to jump into was just the news about aforementioned City of Brotherly Love quarterback Carson Wentz, number 2 overall pick, was the target of a massive trade to get him. And there are now reports by coach Doug Peterson that Wentz is likely going to be inactive for the first game or maybe two or three. And what I found interesting about this is, obviously this is early, who knows, maybe this is all a smokescreen to let him play himself higher up into the lineup during training camp. But Philadelphia has had this crazy quarterback situation going on all offseason. And, you know, it looks like Jared Goff maybe he'll be the week one starter. But is this possibly a part of some sort of a trend where we're going back to the days of sitting quarterbacks and training them behind some sort of a veteran for a while? What do you think, Greg?
I mean, maybe. I think it's more likely that this is an extremely rare circumstance where they have a lot of depth in front of them. And also, it might be a fact that Doug Peterson isn't used to having a quarterback with so much talent on his roster.
Oh.
That's right.
In case Alex you didn't pick up on that, that was, yeah, that was Greg taking a shot at my Chiefs, being that Doug Peterson was the former offensive coordinator. Yeah, I guess, you know, he hasn't had to coordinate for any rapists either. But any other thoughts from you guys on Wentz?
This is a this is kind of a master stroke of media manipulation by the coach, in that there's no downside for Wentz here, right? So this all happens before he straps on pads and starts throwing a football around, right? So you can't say that he looks bad and that's why he's not getting the start. The coach is definitively saying he's not getting the start, right? So if he's not starting in week one, it's not his fault. That's what the coach said. But if he goes in there and blows doors off, you know, what are we going to do, not start him? So, you know, you can always reverse on that. No one's ever going to call foul on it, right? So it's definitely a win-win scenario based on the timing. So good move.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Keep the expectations low. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with that. I mean, hopefully Doug Peterson he seems like a smart enough guy. Hopefully he's actually watched Sam Bradford actually play football. And if he has, he realizes exactly what he has. I mean, Bradford's winning at the game of making money, but he's not winning a whole lot of actual football games. So I think Bradford will start the season as a starter, but I don't think that leash is very, very short. I mean, you know how Philly fans are in the media. They're going to be calling for Carson Wentz in a heartbeat if Sam Bradford plays like he usually does.
Sam Bradford playing the piano is like Sasquatch walking around the Pacific Northwest. Other people have told me that they've seen it, but I've never seen it.
All right, well, we will leave it there on that particular topic. And I think that might be our last mention of NFC team for quite some time. So sorry, NFC folks. But we're now going back to my division, the AFC West, where Joey Bosa is talking about holding out. That's at least what the San Diego Union Tribune is calling his contract situation. Granted, he showed up to minicamp and training camp hasn't started, so he hasn't held out from anything yet. But apparently he's really playing hardball on a couple of, I mean, basically the only little things that you can argue about in a rookie deal under the latest CBA. And those negotiable items are offsets and basically cash flow in terms of when the bonus money gets paid out. He wants basically no offsets in his contract, and he wants basically more of his bonus money to be paid out sooner. Apparently, this is becoming a bit of a trend, and it's a bit of a weird thing to be fighting over, because as long as you're with San Diego, for the next, throughout the remainder of your rookie contract, none of this really matters. But either way, it is the first time we've had this amount of drama, I guess, in the top five of players taken in quite a while, basically, because of the CBA. So I'll toss it to you, Patrick, first. Any thoughts on this?
Did somebody let him talk to Eric Weddle? Maybe if this is a team that doesn't habitually screw over its stars, then they don't really have this problem.
That's a good point.
I've had Joey Bosa rammed down my throat for like the last three years about Ohio State, honkies and everything. And I've always tried to like the guy, but like this is just another thing to dislike about the guy. And I mean, his dad was a bust when he came into the league. He has to prove that he's not going to be a bust. I mean, I guess if you're playing only having one NFL contract, then maybe this is a big deal. But why are you doing this? I mean, why are you drawing the sand on the line and going to threaten to hold out when you're just a rook? And I mean, he's not even a slam dunk impact player on that team. I mean, I know he's taking third overall, but he's not like a scheme fit. How are they going to use him? There's some questions there. And maybe it's just because of my hatred of Ohio State that I kind of take exception to this from him.
Well, one guy who I think has probably earned the money that's coming his way is that we did not end up with a Von Miller holdout. Von Miller did sign a long-term deal with the Denver Broncos that I believe it is valued up to a total of $114 million, with $70 million guaranteed. Apparently, those guarantees can actually slide up to $78 million. According to some reports, although that's apparently not how the Broncos look at it. But this does make him the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. And you know, I personally, having played against him twice a year for the last several seasons, I think he's worth it. But obviously this is a blockbuster contract. As a team that that got knocked out of the playoffs by these guys, what do you think about this, Greg?
I mean, it's an absolute must sign for them. I mean, he is worth it, and especially when you factor into the salary cap that they don't have a franchise quarterback that they're paying right now, because they let Brock walk and even retire. So they have the availability. So if they're going to save any face for the fan base, you got to bring him back. And he's well worth it, like you said. I mean, I can't say one negative thing about his play.
I think the other big thing is just that, you know, as we're going to talk about a little bit more with Andrew later in the podcast, our Jets superfan, is that with the expectation that the salary cap's going to keep on growing, if you can, you know, for these top players, if you can get a long-term deal, it may be a lot of money now, but the salary cap growth and the inflation of contracts at those positions is going to make it a cheap deal in the latter years of the deal. Any other thoughts from you guys, Pat and Don, on Von Miller?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money. I mean, when you hear guarantees in the contract, it's not necessarily all guaranteed. I mean, you have, like, roster bonuses and that kind of stuff. It's gonna be hard for him to live up to that kind of money, considering what he's already done. I mean, if there's a guy to do it, yeah, I'm not exactly a big Broncos fan myself, but, I mean, Von Miller is young enough where I think he could, you know, possibly live up to it. But, again, you know, but like you said before, with no franchise quarterback on the payroll right now, you know, and the way the salary cap keeps going up and up every year, it's a big charge, but I think the Broncos are built to be able to handle it.
Yeah, I certainly don't love the guy, but you can't really fault his play. I mean, having recently been eviscerated by him individually in a rather important game, I can tell you, it looks like he's worth the money. He's young enough that he's probably not going to age off that contract, and if he does, they'll just restructure it anyway. So, like, this is the way the NFL is supposed to work, I suppose.
Well, I want to move on to another defensive player that has given you a bit of trouble there, Pat. It is Mo Wilkerson, the defensive tackle for the New York Jets. Our New York Jets superfan, Andrew, was having a busy weekend, but he called in just to talk to us about it, so let's toss it over to him. All right, so Andrew, tell us what you think about this big deal for your big man. It looks like it ultimately came to being an $86 million deal with $36.75 million fully guaranteed at signing. I've seen some places that it adds up to something like $17 million a year, but it seems like some of the numbers are just sort of trickling out now. Obviously, this was quite unexpected, but at the same time, it has some ramifications possibly for some other players. So, you know, just give us your full rant. What does this mean for the Jets? And how do you feel?
I feel like when a deal like this is made, we always tend, at least outside observers, tend to look at the numbers, and that's the first thing they look at in context of how it helps build the team. That's just in general of what's going around in fandom nowadays, like, oh, the transaction sort of surpassing the action on the field is what fans are interested in. But as a Jets fan, I'm just so happy to know that Muhammad Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, and Sheldon Richardson will at least be on the same field for the next two seasons. At least they're all three under control for the next two seasons. And if you want to get into the numbers, $37 million fully guaranteed is nothing compared to when Fletcher Cox gets $63 million completely guaranteed. Wilkerson has another $17 million guaranteed, but that's for injury only. So if the unlikely occurrence of Wilkerson's play falling off occurs, then the Jets will be able to cut him without any ramifications to their salary cap. But the bigger aspect of this is that with the rising salary cap in the NFL, it's more important than ever for these teams to lock up their superstars. I mean, you just look at free agency. Olivier Vernon, who's a great player, I even I don't think he gets enough credit because I think he's one of those guys that stands out as a guy who's going to be overpaid, sort of like what Joe Johnson is like in the NBA, like when he got that big contract. Joe Johnson's a very good player. So is Olivier Vernon, but he's always going to have to live up to that contract. But a guy like Muhammad Wilkerson is getting the same amount of total money and less guaranteed money than Olivier Vernon. I don't think a Jet fan or any other fan could really be upset about the way this all turned out. And I think it's a credit to Mike Maccagni and the rest of the front office and the new regime of the way they deal with player contracts. And that sort of brings up another conversation with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But in general, the whole offseason, I've been on the same page with what this front office was doing. I was really hoping they would re-sign Wilkerson. I wasn't holding my breath. I didn't think that it was a crazy move to franchise tag him. But for the reason why franchise tag him again next offseason for only $18 million. But them re-signing Wilkerson, I think, does a lot for the locker room in terms of they know that the Jets take care of their players. And maybe that has some ramifications in what's going to happen with Fitzpatrick. So all in all, I think this move, this Wilkerson move, and forthcoming Fitzpatrick move, one way or the other, I think it solidified a really solid offseason for the Jets, especially after they went out and spent a lot of money last offseason.
And so you mentioned Fitzpatrick. What does this mean for their ability and their space in terms of giving him a deal? And what does this mean for the future of Sheldon Richardson, who's had some bad news come out in terms of this offseason for him?
Well, the news with Richardson has been the same for over a year. I mean, he just got punished for his driving he was speeding in Missouri like 125 miles an hour, and the car smelled like weed, and there was a baby. I mean, there's probably a lot to that story that we haven't heard, but I think this just puts more pressure on him to keep his nose clean and keep everything on the up and up off the field. Because I mean, maybe up and up is probably not the right term after I just said nose clean. But he has to be able to act like a professional off the field. And now knowing if Jets have Wilkerson locked up, it sort of gives the Jets more leverage in negotiations with Richardson. It's really like a domino effect. And you could talk about that in terms of Fitzpatrick as well. This contract actually opened up $5 million in cap space for this year. So if the Jets conceivably were willing to oblige Fitzpatrick's request of a one-year $12 million contract, they would be able to do it with very little maneuvering. Maybe you cut Bruno Giacchini, or maybe you cut Nick Folk, but they'll be able to bring him back. But it's just a matter of if Fitzpatrick going to cave to the Jets' demands, where the Jets want $12 million the first year, but then they want to pay him backup money the second and third year just to have him as an asset. And I could understand Fitzpatrick's frustration because of the year he just had, but again, he has no leverage. So it's very... Again, I like the way Maccagnan played it, and he's gotten a lot of criticism for it. Some from his players, I mean, they haven't outright said that the front office is doing the job, but they're like, oh, it sucks that Fitzpatrick isn't here, and then Wilkerson wasn't here. Now that they got Wilkerson locked up, maybe perceptions will change, and the players will be more on the front office's side if this comes into training camp. That's still up an issue.
All right, Patrick, you have to face this team twice a year. What do you think about the move and how the Jets are handling this offseason in light of this last deal?
So, I've been talking about the Jets pretty much the same way for the last several years, which is that the strength of that team is their defensive line. I don't think that's a mystery to anybody. I do think we're pretty dramatically underplaying both the potential to lose a guy and, that you should be losing a guy when he's driving 140 miles an hour in the city with an assault rifle, a 12-year-old boy in a car filled with marijuana. Like that is hitting for the cycle. it's astounding that this isn't bigger news than it is, but whatever. I guess we have
Patrick, that's because it wasn't in New York City, it was in Missouri, and we all know New York City is the capital of the world, the capital of the NFL, and that's why no one cares because it was in Missouri, so that's why it's not a story.
Well, I guess that's why. But, I'd be careful, man, if I were you, because if it turns out that, Wilkerson was at least likely generally aware that somebody else was probably committing these offenses in a different state, you could lose that guy for four games. Because that's reasonable.
Well,
anyway, it's not all about me today. Congratulations on locking up one of your best players. Like, I have nothing negative to say about, you know, the man or the necessarily even the deal. You know, best of luck to you. Maybe you can scratch together a couple of pennies and find a guy to throw the ball, you know, 10 yards down the field without getting picked off. And, you know, then you guys can have something to celebrate.
Well, and the worst thing about the whole Richardson incident was I hear that also his tires were slightly underinflated, and that's a safety issue.
Yeah, you know what? My joke was funnier. We've already brought it in, but that's fine.
Yeah, Patrick's number one with everything. The joke, football team. Just oblige him and say that he's correct, and we'll all get out of here safely.
Don't make jokes off my jokes.
All right, man. Okay. Well, Andrew, I think I really appreciate you coming on, and I will let you get back to your fantastic weekend.
Thank you so much, my friend. And Patrick. Later, guys.
Yeah, okay.
My friend and
that's
Patrick.
That's fine.
All right, and that brings us to our other AFC, this time not a defender exactly, but another player that got a long-term deal. And this is the one that's going to totally shatter the league. The Ravens reached a 4-year deal with kicker Justin Tucker. It is going to pay him out, looks like $16.8 million, with $10.8 million guaranteed. I haven't seen that, but that seems like, I mean, maybe, there's got to be some other guys that are making more guaranteed money, but among the kickers, but that seems like an awful lot, 10.8. But anyways, tell us about this guy, Don, and why this guy is worth this sort of a deal for you.
Yeah, from what I was reading, Tucker actually is now the highest paid kicker when it comes to guarantees, but Steven Gostkowski with the Patriots edges him out a little bit in total money. Tucker is a product of having Billy Cundiff on our team for the 2011 season. He came in as an undrafted guy, won the job in training camp, and you know, last year, even though they pushed back the extra point length, did not miss an extra point. I mean, we've had Matt Stover for so long for the Ravens, you know, a clutch, reliable kicker. But not only is he able to be reliable in short distances, but he's also good from long distances as well. I mean, we heard the rumbling that he was not, if they didn't re-sign him to a long deal, a long-term deal this year, he would not re-sign with the Ravens in 2017. I don't know how much I buy into that, but he's a good kicker. He's been, you know, great for us for 4 seasons now, and I'm glad to have him in the fold for another 4. I'm excited.
So, Patrick, don't you wish that you had more guaranteed money going Steven Gostkowski's way?
You know what? I love making fun of kickers. I think it's part of the game. Not kicking, making fun of kickers. But the truth of the matter is there's only like 25 good ones at any given point in time. They're kind of like quarterbacks that way, except people still let crappy quarterbacks hang around the league, and that's not true of kickers. So when you get one, you hold on to one. And in the case of the Patriots, when you have the most accurate kicker in the history of the league, and you've had him for 10 years, you definitely keep the guy. So I'm fine with Gostkowski's contract. Like, re-sign him for all I care.
Well, and Greg, your team has really struggled to have a consistent kicker, at least this last season. It was a revolving door at that position. You know, does this seem too rich, or does it seem like the sort of deal that makes sense?
Well, it's the price of doing business, right? I mean, he is one of the elite guys at his position. And they saw what the Steelers had when they lost Sean Sweeson last year in the preseason. It took us about a month into the season to find a reliable kicker, which cost us a game in Pittsburgh against Baltimore early on. And we also have a kicker on our roster, or on our salary cap, that we're Sean Sweeson, that we're paying $1 million of dead money. So I'd rather spend $4 million on a kicker that's going to be there. That guy's no longer on the roster. So I'm actually, I've always been envious, too, of Tucker, because I think he has a knack for hitting the 50-plus yard field goals. He's really accurate that way, really deadly. So I don't see anything wrong with it.
Good stuff. Well, and so just to run through the other players that were given the franchise tag, a couple more that their situation's already changed earlier in the offseason. Just as a reminder, Bills tackle Cordy Glenn signed an extension earlier in the offseason, and the Panthers rescinded their tag they put on cornerback Josh Norman, who ended up with the Redskins. And then four other players ended up with the tag, and it looks like they're going to have to play under them. The first is Kirk Cousins, and quarterback extraordinaire of the Redskins. That, I don't know, to me, the fact that he didn't get a long-term deal really didn't surprise me, just because he seems like the sort of guy, the gutsy sort of guy, he wants to have a year to prove it, and hey, if he burns out, he's got $20 million in his pocket with the $19.9 million franchise tag. But did it, was it surprising to any of the rest of you guys, or did you think that the Washington should have given him a longer deal?
I think it was the exact right play for Washington. I mean, Kirk Cousins did also, like, sprint back to their offices and sign the tender when he got franchised. So, I mean, you know, it's a prove-it deal. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, my only thought about this, and this is something that actually they talked a lot about on the Thursday show. James, our Texans fan, he wasn't a huge fan of the strategy, although, you know, granted, his team just gave a boatload of money to Brock Osweiler. So, anyways, you know, because he thinks that this, I mean, basically, that Washington's almost certainly going to give him a longer contract at the end of the season anyway, because basically, unless he totally poops the bed, that, you know, that they're, I mean, he's still going to be the best they have on the roster. And if he has a really bad season, then he's going to be cheap to sort of keep around. But if he plays really well, then, you know, we've seen the way that quarterback contracts have gotten inflated. And, you know, he's going to be somewhere around maybe a $20 million a year number if he actually has a really great season. Or they could franchise him for, you know, something also in the 20s, you know, guaranteed. So, I mean, at this point, you know, they might have had a cheaper extension available and on the table for them this year, but I don't know. Do you guys not think that would have been worth the risk of you know, tying up some money in the sky for the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I think the Redskins played it exactly the right way. I mean, you're going to give him $20 million this year, but what if they re-signed him or, you know, gave him $50 million guaranteed, and then he bombs out and they're on the hook for that? Because, I mean, if he does have another good year, I mean, if he leaves into the playoffs again, I mean, he's making $20 million this year. Even though the contract's inflated, he's going to be making, you know, about that money on a long-term contract. So they're really, even the franchise tag is really a security blanket for him. So I think they did the right thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and in that division, too, you know, you just saw what the Eagles had with Nick Foles a few years ago, where he threw one interception the entire season. And like, you know, what, a 10 starts or something. And then, you know, he's out the door before you know it, and the Rams now are on the hook, you know, extending him prematurely and all that junk. And, you know, at the time when he went off the good season of only having one interception, Nick Foles and Kirk Cousins are equivalent guys at this point in their two respective careers. I mean, not Nick Foles today, but Nick Foles when he had that great season.
Yeah, and you never know when you're... you know, a Washington fan, when your quarterback has one really good year and, you know, then you're playing the Giants and he gets his leg completely destroyed and can never play again, right? That's fresh in the minds of that fan base.
Well, that is true. Well, the Rams were mentioned, and they also had a player that is going to be playing this season on the franchise tag. That is cornerback Tremaine Johnson, who I honestly have never really heard of. He's going to be playing for just under $14 million this year, which to me seems awful rich for a cornerback I haven't heard of on a team that opposing teams probably rarely have to throw against. But I don't know. Maybe one of you guys have seen a bit more tape on this guy than I have. What is Tremaine Johnson worth this $14 million number?
It's a lot of money to go easy. That's all I know.
Well, that's true. Statistically, he was really good, but I'd be lying to you if I said I've seen a Rams game in like 5 years. you know, so I can't speak intelligently about the player, but I do know that if you have two good corners on your team, you do what you can to lock them up, right? Like, two good corners is about the equivalent of one good quarterback, you know, and about two good kickers.
I somehow feel like that was another shot at me about Sean Smith, but I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just
not
taking things personally today.
Wow, dude, you're sensitive. You're like a 15-year-old girl.
All I know is that everyone doesn't like the Chiefs for some reason. Anyways, we're getting to them.
No one's coming to your party.
So, another player, again, that actually our Bears super fan thought was going to get a deal. I mean, there was a lot of bad signs about mistrust between this player and the organization, but wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, he is going to be playing under the franchise tag this year as well, at a little under $14.6 million. I mean, that's a number that I think he's probably worth if he's healthy. It just means that they're going to go another season and potentially have to give him a mega deal or let him go probably at the end of this season. Given that, I don't know, I mean, the Bears are such a weird team right now. They seem to be rebuilding sections of the team. I still think they overachieved and still weren't that great last year, but the aerial attack is something that they do have. Do you guys, you know, looking ahead, do you think that this is that Jeffrey's going to get himself a long-term deal after the season?
No, this is the one that surprised me with Jeffrey. You know, I expected the other franchise tag guys to sign longer-term deals, and I expected, Barry, Johnson, and Cousins not to have long-term deals. But I thought Jeffrey would have. And all I can think back to is that this head coach without Adam Geis is still John Fox, who spent a record number of dollars on two running backs and no money on wide receivers in New Carolina. And it just feels like he's going back to that old philosophy here. And you just don't understand it, because Jeffrey is a type of guy that you want to invest a lot of money in. He is an elite guy at his position. So I don't really understand it at all.
I guess I agree. I don't understand why they didn't get the long-term deal with him either. I mean, obviously the soft tissue injuries were his biggest downfall last year. But you've got Kevin White coming off of that shin injury. You know, didn't play a single snap. You don't know what you have in him. So I don't know if they're taking a wait-and-see approach to see if Kevin White can be, you know, the number one. But I find it hard to believe that when you have such a big threat like Alshon that you're just going to franchise him for a year and then let him walk. I don't see that happening, but I'm not exactly sure what their strategy here is.
Well, that then brings us finally to my sad song about Eric Berry. I mean, I guess it's not that big of a deal. I just personally feel bad, because if you listen to the Thursday show, you will have heard someone very confidently guarantee that Eric Berry was getting a long-term deal. And I still don't understand why it didn't get done. I mean, on one hand, on the surface of it, Eric Berry is going to be playing on the franchise tag for a safety, which is only $10.8 million a year for the year, which actually, given that a long-term deal with him probably would have been in that same neighborhood in terms of a yearly figure anyway, it's not like that amount of money is not a problem. I'm more annoyed with it because of what it does to the Chiefs' cap situation. Without him, you know, signing some sort of a longer deal where they could, like, push some of the money forward a couple of years, the Chiefs are going into training camp with something like $270,000 under the cap. So if they lose anybody to injury, they're going to have to cut some people in order to be able to bring in just a journeyman at the veteran minimum. And this is, I mean, I don't know, I haven't taken a hard look at the way that the cap is going to set up for the Chiefs next year. But this is something that, it's been a little bit of a growing concern with me and this administration. RGM John Dorsey, I think he's done a very good job of bringing in talent. I think he's, the way he churns the bottom of the roster has made this team the deepest it's been in a very long time. But he hasn't been a great capologist, and we've been close to the top of the cap ever since basically this new regime came to town. And this is one of those things I think is a little bit playing with fire. It also sort of surprises me just because we know that Eric Berry's been sort of a big emotional leader for the team ever since his cancer diagnosis. He's the main veteran and the main leader of the secondary, which is an important part of the Chiefs' defense. And frankly, right now has a bunch of young players that need to make some real advancements in order for that team, that unit to continue to be solid. I mean, we don't know who's going to be starting at the at the CB2 spot, and it's likely going to be a rookie at some point, at least during the season. So, you know, having Eric Berry happy would definitely make me happier and a little bit more confident in the back end of that defense. But it also, I mean, it's something I was thinking about once I was looking at that, you know, Tremaine Johnson, the I think is his name, that Rams cornerback that none of us know, is that, you know, the franchise number for a corner is $14 million. And you know, safeties get paid way under that. I think Eric Berry is probably eventually going to get, whether he's with the Chiefs or not next year, he's going to end up making, you know, 11, 12 a year somewhere. But I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about the value of this position, because I certainly think that the top end safeties are every bit as important as your corners, particularly if you play them the right way. So I'll throw it to you first, Pat, because you guys have a very talented secondary as well. I mean, would you be comfortable paying a safety $12 million a year? Or do you think that safeties can be found for less?
Well, I played safety in college, so I'm not the one you want to ask that question if you want an objective response. But I will say that I lost many a football game due to my fundamentally poor lack of skills. So, you know, a good defensive back, I don't care where they play, an elite defensive back is insanely important in, you know, 2016. So you pay them. If you can, you pay them. Unless they're kind of old and, you know, coming off a spot of cancer, in which case, you know, you got to be a little bit more cautious. And, you know, if your team is in critical cap problems, it's really easy to say what you should and could do, you know, in a vacuum. But if you have barely enough money to field a football team, if you're in the unlikely position of having somebody injured during training camp, then you got to be careful when you start talking about, you know, bringing back the old guys for another, you know, major deal.
What about you, Greg? You said that you didn't think that that Eric Berry was going to get a long-term deal. Why was that?
Well, my perception, and I don't watch a ton of Chiefs football, but my perception of Eric Berry when he's coming into the league was that he was the next Troy Polamalu, or he was the next Ed Reed. And I don't think he ever achieved that level before he got cancer. And so when you add in the cancer risk, that is what I really thought was, like, you know, I thought he was a good safety, but not one of these Hall of Fame level safeties. And when you add in the fact that he has this huge medical unknown out there, I just thought it was a done deal that they wouldn't come to a contract. That being said, I do see the value in spending at the safety position, and I actually think it's much more important than corner. I do not agree with Patrick that you can just have any good guy in the secondary. I just think in the modern NFL, where your safety can, you know, affect the run game, affect the passing game, cover one-on-one like the carry can, he is incredibly valuable. Just I don't know if he ever achieved the level that he was expected to, and therefore that's what I kind of suppressed his value in my own mind about. I hope the rumors about them wanting him to take out an insurance policy against his guaranteed money wasn't true. I think that's a really cheap thing for the organization. I mean, that's not covered by the salary cap. If the organization was worried about him having a recurrence of cancer and they didn't want to guarantee the money and wanted the player to pay for the insurance policy, I think that's really bad. I just hope that his rumors aren't true.
So, Greg, just to be clear, when I said any member of the secondary is critically important, I wasn't saying that you can have any member of the secondary and then you're good. I'm saying if at any position in the secondary you have somebody that's elite, you lock them up. Corner, free safety, strong safety, doesn't matter. Like get that guy under contract.
I understand that, and I agree with that sentiment. I mean, any elite player you have in your roster, you try to lock up.
Well, that's true, even the kicker. That's true.
But I think Ed Reed affected a lot more passing games than Darrell Revis ever has. Because Revis can
I agree. He's the best defensive back I've seen in my lifetime. Like Ed Reed is the best DB I've ever seen play.
I in pass coverage, I totally agree. I think he affected more offenses than anyone else in the league has in my 30 years of watching football. So
I'm sure Don disagrees.
Oh yeah, heartily disagree. Yeah, Ed Reed was terrible.
All right, I'm glad we have that on the record.
Thanks, new guy.
So Don, what's your take then?
I mean, the past several years, I mean, the Ravens have had just, I would say, borderline horrendous play at the safety position. You know, they're mixing and matching. Obviously, Matt Elam has been a bust. 2013 first round pick. We've had just almost journeyman types back there, and they're just getting blown up. Just out of position. Poor tackling, the whole nine. So I can understand wanting to re-sign Eric Berry, but just like you guys, I haven't seen a whole lot of Chiefs football. I don't know, it seems from what I've been seeing, he's a good all-around guy, but like nothing that pops out about him. Like, going back to the little bit older days, Troy Polamalu is, especially good in the run game, fierce tackler. Ed Reed was, specialty was, interceptions and passing plays, but I've heard good things about Eric Berry, but I don't think he's I don't think he's worth 11 to 12 million a year long term, especially unfortunately for him because of the health concerns. I agree with that. That's my take.
Yeah, well, Greg, you mentioned the reports about the disability insurance policy. I just wanted to touch upon that because it is sort of what's interesting about Berry, and I agree with actually a lot of Yaris' sentiments that he hasn't put together, the sort of crazy dominant seasons like Polamalu or Ed Reed, although I do think he probably has it in him. I mean, the weird case with him is a couple of things. One is that he was either the fourth or the fifth overall pick in the last year of the old CBA. So he instantly became the highest paid safety in the history of the league. And one of the highest paid defensive backs, I think, from his rookie year. And so obviously there was a lot expected of him there. Also, I think the first regime he was drafted into didn't really utilize him all that well. He clearly had the skill to be sort of a free safety running all over the secondary, but he was like elite also as like a box safety. And so for whatever reason, they were running him in the box all the time, which you can find a guy for cheaper to do that for you. Anyways, but so he had his best season ever in 2013, the first year that Andy Reid and his guys came in. The year after that was his year where he was suddenly really bad, and no one figured out why until like six games in, realized he had cancer. And then last year he came back a little slow from the cancer, but once he was healthy, he really turned it on. And like the second two-thirds of the season, he was really, really good. But so in between there, because I think it was his fifth year of his rookie deal and this massive rookie deal, everyone was expecting the Chiefs to designate him in some way where it took that off the cap. Or, I was suggesting even that, cut him in some way and then just, like, give him this X amount of money as, like, a media person with the front office just until he's like back and healthy, because the Chiefs, like, I think his cap hit during that offseason was something like 16 or 17 million or something like that for a guy that no one really expected to play in 2015. And so they really hampered themselves in that offseason because they were unwilling to not look at him as an on-the-field player, and it was a surprise to everybody that he was able to come back. But I think that's sort of the prologue of this dispute. I mean, if it was really the case, they're saying like, all right, well, we really stuck our necks out and our dollars out for you and your health during this period of time. We want a little bit of, we want to get a little bit back on the back end of that if there's more problems in the future. And he wasn't having it. Although I've heard from reports that they basically didn't agree on any portion of the deal. They didn't get a single part of the structure agreed upon. So this was sort of a non-starter from the beginning. And again, we'll see. I mean, maybe we'll get him for cheap if he has another like year like 2013 for $10.8 million. We'll just have to wait and see.
Two things. Like one, if he has another bad year, do you really want to bring him back? And, too, if he doesn't have a bad year and he becomes a free agent, I think you're talking to three guys right now that would be happy to sign him on their teams, right? So I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a good player. He's over criticized because he was a top five pick through no fault of his own, right? If he were the fifth pick in the second round, and have the exact same career, and he was in the exact same contract position, I think public perception would be a little bit different.
Yeah, and the other option is that the Chiefs could just franchise him again. I mean, and if they do that, then they would be paying him in 2017. The number would be $12.96 million, which, again, is sort of on the high side of, like, whatever his yearly average would be, probably on a long-term extension. So that's still an option, but that would be, I mean, I'm looking at Pro Football Talk's numbers here. I mean, that would be $23.76 million for him over a two-year period. That's not cheap for a safety. So we'll just have to see how that all plays out.
You know, one side note, it's kind of goofy. I was just looking at his contract on over the cap. He was a 2010 draft pick, and he's now being considered all these 2012 draft picks, like Jeffrey, for his second contract. I mean, I know it was really expensive, but it's just shocking that he's 27, 28, just getting his second contract now.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why he wants this to be his big payday as well. Which is probably making the negotiations difficult. Cool. Well, we have now gotten through all of the tag discussion. We've touched upon every player. I'm glad we were able to get four other superfans all here for that. And so, coming up, we're going to have some good stuff. Pod Vader and the crew, including probably Greg, is going to be back on Thursday. And pretty soon, I think something we're going to think about doing in terms of previewing our teams going into training camp is getting people together and talking about what is the best case scenario and the worst case scenario for each and every one of our teams based on what we're seeing from the early signs. We're going to be doing some more early tea leaves, early predicting. But in the meantime, if any of you want to get in touch with us and get involved in the discussion, there's a lot of ways to listen to us and a lot of ways to get talking with us personally. You can always find our podcast on the blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can please subscribe to us on iTunes and leave comments. That's something that really helps other people find the show, and we always like to hear what you think as well. You can send us direct fan and hate mail at nextfanup@gmail.com. And we're always putting out stuff on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, you can find us by just typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. And on Twitter, we are at NFU Podcast. And I know a lot of us, we're pretty consistently interacting with that account as well. But if you want to hit me up personally, I am at Clayton Nicholas. And so for you, Patrick, for people who want to join our Chicago superfan Tom in trolling you this week, where can they best do that?
Yeah, if you wanna get me to basically dedicate my life to Twitter, all you have to do is mention Deflategate, and I will go off the deep end 140 characters at a time. And that's at Siska617. That's Siska617. Don't tweet me. Like, it's really just gonna wreck my life.
All right, that's encouragement if I've ever heard it. And so, Don, if our fans and haters want to properly welcome you to the team, and I'm sure it'll be other of our super fans wanting to get you involved as well, what's the best way of shouting out at you?
Best way is on Twitter as well. I am at Big Don Paul. That's at BIGDONPAUL. I don't tweet a whole lot myself. I do a lot of retweets, and I do a lot of studying on there. But I'm on there all the time, so if anybody has any, especially hate, I do like to hear hate, so go ahead and bring it on.
All right, and last but not least, Greg, not many people know this, but Greg actually lives in enemy territory in Cleveland, and I'm sure he's going to be enjoying every minute of the convention this week. for his live updates from that and any other things that people want to talk to you about, Greg. How can they get you there?
Yeah, Dad Bods and Browns football. That'd be great. at Greg the Great 21 on Twitter. So pretty, self-deprecating.
Yeah, Greg the Humble was taken, obviously.
Yeah, well, there's just so many Gregs out there. Yeah, gotta fight
self-deprecating. Okay.
Yeah, that's how he describes that. All right, man. Well, thanks to all of you guys and to all of our listeners out there. I believe there you have it. And in the immortal words of Jeff Fisher.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.